completely different.
Happy hour. Happy hour.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I don't know if you remember me, but at the Morning Show Boot Camp 2 years ago, you did that panel about how radio needs to be fixed, and I was the 6'8" kid that talked about 102.5 The Bone and Real Radio in Orlando.
Yeah, no, I remember you, man. We were talking in the elevator, too.
Yeah, we did.
About a bunch of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. That was a fun time being there. I was only there for a couple of days. I had a good time.
Yeah, what I liked about your talk, too, was you just went right into radio, because the rest of the panels, I love the boot camp, but it's very positive. Like, you got to do this for the listeners. You got to do that. And you just went in with, I think it was Turi Ryder, and you just said the honest truth. And everybody seemed so overwhelmed by that panel.
Well, you know, I don't want anybody to feel that I don't love the talent that is in our business. You know, I know how hard everybody works. You, everybody. But when you go to these things, you always find, if you could ask people to raise their hand and say, how many people are here that are CEOs? How many people here are the real decision makers?
Yeah.
They don't go to those, man. And there's nobody there except programmers, some programmers, mostly talent. And we're talking about all the great things we want to do because we have great passion for the industry. And nobody ever attends those things that can actually get something done and get something changed. And I really resent that. You know, our industry, I was telling this to a friend of mine the other day. I said, I don't know, man. I'm experiencing something I think few people in history have experienced, watching their entire industry go away. I mean, almost like being a worker in the automotive business or a coal miner or something. You know, you suddenly, there's no business anymore. And I know that there's radio stations, but not in the numbers, and certainly not in terms of programming and content, the wonderful and crazy and explosive times, you know, that the 80s brought us, for instance, with the Steve Dahl show, the emergence of Howard Stern, even the emergence of Rush Limbaugh, when talent was really beginning to be heard. And all of a sudden, almost just as quickly, it just got shut down within the next, you know, 10, 15 years.
Do you think the whole debacle that was Free FM, if that would have been done in the right way, could that have saved radio? Or was Howard leaving radio just bad from the beginning?
I think with proper leadership in our industry, the industry could have pushed on. Look, Ryan, you're doing a podcast. I do one. I mean, there's an audience out there of some 50 million and growing for audio entertainment. It isn't that people stop listening to things. It's that they're moving away from radio and trying to find something else because the content on radio is so bad. And I think you put that down to programmers, the decision makers who, you know, are the ones that ultimately make these decisions as to what we hear on the air. So you bring up Free FM. I don't think there's a greater indictment of that than the fact that Adam Carolla left the morning show in Los Angeles, working out here for that format, and has a podcast now, man, that's $1 million a year, you know, in terms of revenue. Just that show brings in about I don't know how much it's bringing in, to be honest with you, but I know that guy makes a ton of dough. And that was money that was given up by CBS because, you know, they had people calling the shots there that didn't know what they were doing, I think.
What about kids my age? Do you think we have a chance to rejuvenate radio and try to build it up from the beginning?
You guys are the only hope. And I used to say, I'm telling you, you cats are it, because I said, God, I can't wait for another generation, for the next generation of executives and programmers and talent to come along, because those guys will save this. You know, I may be dead by then, but it definitely needs really courageous and creative people. And I'm trying to think of people in other industries who combine that creative thinking with great salesmanship. I don't know, maybe the guys in the high tech, and you know, maybe the guys in Silicon Valley, you know, where they came up with the hardware, they came up with the software, they came up with the content, they came up with the sales vehicle. I mean, they did it all. And we need guys like that in this business, because people are listening to things, man. My girlfriend listens to 5, 6, 7 podcasts, man. You know, Mark Maron had the president of the United States come into his garage, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, what does that tell you? So people are out there. You know, I'm in the car. I listen to, on my tune in, I listen to soccer from England. I'm listening to my own podcast. I listen to Mark's podcast. I listen to Joe Rogan's. I listen to all of them, man. And I sometimes I'll sit there and go, why am I not listening to the radio? Because God knows I used to. Well, there's nothing on it anymore, man. There's sports talk, and if I'm telling you, though, all those shows sound the same. Every single one of those sports shows in my mind sounds identical.
Oh, dude, it's spot on. Yeah. Every day, if you tune on ESPN, it's just debates. Yeah. I don't know what's happened to sports journalism within the last 10 years, but it's officially dead. It's what about this guy or this guy? Like, the creativity in sports journalism, Phil, has gone by the wayside. It's not there anymore.
We lost the guy out here in L.A., and you probably have guys in Chicago and elsewhere. We lost Joe McDonald. And Joe we called him the Big Nasty. He was a big, huge dude, but he was a guy that was around town. He had his ear to the ground and everything. It was fun to listen to him. We had a guy named Jim Healy that used to use production values in his. He did a 5-minute sports cast every day, Ryan. It was only 5 minutes long. It was the most listened to 5 minutes in LA radio because he used drops. He used this cornball old school teletype sound. You know, he would do these things. Dateline Dodger Stadium. You know, Tommy Lasorda the other day said this and that, and then he'd have a drop of Lasorda, you know, cussing somebody out. You know, he'd beep it, but it would be hysterical. This is 5 minutes, and everybody, man, went to their radio for this. Can you imagine today? Is there any such thing on the air? I don't think so. And I believe you guys are where it's at. You've got to push your way in there somehow. I don't know how. A lot of these old school. A lot of the owners, a lot of the executives don't know what to do because they don't know radio, man. They come from some other background, and they've got a lot of dumbasses that are telling them shit. But guys like you, younger people who have got ideas, man, need to get into these offices and tell them how it can be saved. Because back in the day when Tom Donahue went to a radio station in San Francisco that wasn't making any money, and they're about ready to flip the signal to something else, and he said, look, let me try something. And they started playing album cuts. That became Album Rock Radio, which, you know, had a huge, huge high end, you know, there for 30, 40 years. So I think that when you show somebody the money, as the saying goes, that's where it all begins. It's going to show these guys, hey, look, here's how we can turn this thing around. It isn't just about us having fun on the air. I wish it was. But it is about us having fun and, you know, making somebody some money. So
I think the biggest thing with radio right now is nobody wants to take any chances and take any risks. Like here at Cox Media Group in Tampa Bay, we have Bone TV for 102.5 The Bone, and we are one of the only FM talk outlets throughout America left. And we do really well here. And that's what I don't get, Phil, is Tampa's a big market. This is Tampa Bay, Florida. I just don't know why people don't look at the Bone and go, why shouldn't we do this in Milwaukee or Omaha or Portland? Yeah. Why is radio so afraid to take risks? Because to me, when you do that, that's when it works out the best, because then it sounds different and it sounds unique.
Well, what happened to radio around 2013, 2012, and I was sitting in a restaurant, and I was talking to some friends of mine who have a podcast platform, and they have a management group out here. And they said, well, you know, it's great. I didn't even know it was happening, man, because I'd been digital. Well, actually, I was just about ready to go digital.
Yeah.
They said, you know, talk radio is going away. I said, well, what do you mean going away? I said, yeah, it's going to sports. The advertisers were sick and tired of the complaints. Now, I'm not talking about what the Bone does. You know, when I was in Miami at WIOD or like in Chicago, and when the Loop was in its heyday, it was what we used to call personality talk radio. It wasn't necessarily news talk where people were listening to hear about the news. They were listening for the talent. They were listening for the yucks, for the fun that guy brought to them. And that evolved into right-wing radio. And by 2012, 2011, right-wing radio and all of that political talk had got so many people pissed off and so many advertisers dropping. And, you know, they blame Rush Limbaugh for whatever that one thing was.
Wasn't it when he called that girl a whore or whatever, like five years ago?
Yeah, they blame him. But really, I believe that the fight was already taking place, man. You know, they They didn't want the controversy. And so the talk programmers flipped to sports, because what do you get with sports? You get passion, but there's no real controversy there, man. Nobody is calling anybody the N-word. No one, you know, there's no political party at stake. It's just, you know, the craziest it possibly gets is some rowdy Tampa Bay fan going up against some Miami Dolphin fan. So they decided to flip it over there. The advertisers love it. There's passion. There's humor. And it's easy peasy. But unfortunately, programmers being programmers, they can't keep their stupid hands off of things. And so everything sounds the same. Everything sounds the same. You know, there's no, there's one formula for talk, for sports talk, and that's it. And so I think that that's what happened. And you talk about the bone, you talk about some of these personality driven stations. Absolutely. But, you know, we're battling one other thing, Ryan, in our business. Unlike television, unlike movies, unlike even literature, radio doesn't have a comfortable relationship with talent. The radio management people are the only people I've ever heard say the following thing: I don't talk to agents and I don't talk to lawyers. Now, there's only one reason for a guy to say that. He doesn't want the talent to have any kind of control over him. He doesn't want the talent to have any input. He doesn't want the talent to have the negotiating bargaining position. They want to keep us like next to the janitor. They want us out there in the parking lot, you know, going to our same old crappy cars while they're getting into their Mercedes. I mean, it sounds harsh, but why else would there be such an attitude? And I've encountered that throughout my career. And that, I think, is the number one thing. We have to look at talent as being really valuable. You know, do television, and I've done a couple of TV shows, man. They got a dude waiting there so that nobody takes your parking space. You know, then you leave and you go and you get something to eat. They make sure that you're ready to get on the thing, get on the set in front of the camera, and do stuff that's going to be fun and creative. Radio, they make it as hard as they possibly can, man. You know, they your vacation money, is it coming, is it not? You know, can I get a raise? You know, where am I going to park my car? I mean, you feel like you're just another piece of the furniture there. And as a result, whatever talent has come out of radio has had to battle and fight and scrap to become as brilliant as it has. So there's got to be a fundamental change in how we treat the talent. And then there has to be a really aggressive and creative approach to marketing those shows. Don't be lazy. Don't say, this guy's show is too weird, let's move on to show B. You know, really work it and come up with ideas. And if you can't find a station where it fits, create a format for it if you really believe in the show. There's a lot of things that I believe can be done, but unfortunately, I'm not a programmer, man. So maybe you see that.
Why aren't you one? You just basically said what could save this business. I don't know why you're not running a company, Phil, and I'm not just saying it to kiss your ass. What you just said literally made so much sense. It's ridiculous.
Well, the only problem with me is I don't think I'm a very good teacher, you know? And I think that there's a learning curve that has to be done here. I wouldn't mind sitting down with a company and they could pay me a couple of $100,000 and I'll sit there and I'll lay out to them everything that I know, but I don't know that I could actually go day to day into an office. But I think there's some great, great people, young people that can do it and can do it well. And I don't want people to give up on our industry, man, because
I know
there's a lot of fun to be had out there, man. You're having it there at the Bone. There's a lot of good times to be had, and they have, with their bumbling and their mismanagement and their, some of these guys are, you know, I hate to say this, but I mean, some of these guys have found themselves in trouble with the law or some stuff. And actually, I read some stuff from some of these sales guys and market managers that are putting their money into some really suspect things. I didn't want to go into it, but the fact is we need a higher level of person and a harder worker and a more creative person there in those offices. In those offices of power, and start to change their attitude toward talent, and start to kick a little bit of ass in the sales departments too. I hate to say it, but you really got to motivate those guys to a more creative way of looking at their jobs, because I think there's a lot of lazy people in the sales departments where they sit and they wait for the phone to ring, wait for that order to come in, wait for that one relationship they have, sell that one guy. You know, yeah, I got all my guy. Bam, I'm out of here, you know. And meanwhile, there are shows that can really use the help. and it ain't happening. So, look, they have all of this opportunity, man. They're hooking up all these leased stations. They've got mini networks. They've got regional networks. They've got all of this opportunity to reach God knows how many people, and they are just sitting on it. It's like sitting on a silver mine or a diamond mine where everything is, you know, where everything is raw. All you got to do is go in there with a pickaxe and a shovel and a wheelbarrow and start chipping that stuff out of the rocks, because nobody wants to do it. So,
what I want to ask you too is, do you think this whole new trend where we're offended by each and everything that anybody says, is that sort of hurting radio because they're afraid to speak their mind because in 2016 we're all a bunch of pussies?
You know, America's come. I think we should be able to speak our minds, but I think we have to. There's one other thing that we don't really take into consideration. There is a price to be paid, and it isn't just by the powers that be. It's the price to be paid when it comes to our relationships with other people in the community, the neighborhood. We come from a long history in this country from the very beginning of sort of abusive behavior toward certain people. So when somebody gets pissed off, let's say, about a guy being called a name, it isn't that guy decided yesterday that he didn't like that name. It is generation after generation after generation and decade after decade after decade of a behavior that most of us completely have no awareness of, because we grew up in a country that's relatively modern when it comes to that. We have no idea what some people suffered. And before we start to say we'd like to speak our mind, I would really love for us to get a little more educated in terms of the history of this country so we know where we're coming from. And we know exactly why people get pissed off the way they do. I agree with you, man, that, you know, we need to be able to speak our minds. But I also know that there is a consequence to the things that I say. And I can't make somebody love me. If I say something they don't dig, they're just not going to want to have anything to do with me. Like what's going on in North Carolina. Those guys in North Carolina with that transgender bathroom thing, people may think that those are a bunch of politicians trying to suck up for whatever. That's a basic community thing that's happening there. The gay community in this country has political power. And they're saying, we're not going to do business with you if you do this and that. Now, does that mean that they're thin-skinned? Or are they simply saying, we finally, after decades and centuries of having our asses kicked, we finally have a little bit of political position? We don't want to be treated like this. If you do, we're just not going to do business with you. Right now, the NBA is, I don't know what they've decided, but the NBA was going to pull the All-Star game.
It's not looking good. I was reading about it this week. If they keep doing this, I think it'll be out of the game in, let's say, August, out of Charlotte.
And you know what, Ryan? North Carolina can do what they want. If their community feels strongly about these laws, then yeah, keep those laws. But you have to accept that some people are going to say, adios. What are you going to do, pass a law to say, I'm going to do this, and you got to suck on that because we want you for other reasons. We want you to be here and play basketball, although we don't like the fact that you, I mean, it doesn't make sense. Life doesn't work that way. Same thing happened here in Arizona. As you know, Ryan, when the NFL said, well, you know, most of our workforce, a lot of, you know, is African-American. You don't want Martin Luther King's birthday. That's cool. You can do what you want there in Arizona, but we're not having a Super Bowl there. So what happens is, what Mahatma Gandhi found out and what Martin Luther King found out, money is what gets things moving. And Gandhi knew that it was an economic question, and King did. And so these economic boycotts, you hit a guy where he's making his living, and it's funny how some people can come around and see the light or whatever. But I just feel that I want to hear everybody's opinion. I want to know what everybody's feeling, and I want to know what everybody's thinking. But I'd also like a little more education going on here, man. We got a profoundly undereducated country when it comes to these really explosive social issues. People are very short in terms of their attention span. They're impatient, they're angry, they feel hurt, but they don't want to take the time to get really into the truth. And I don't mean InfoWars or Prison Planet or whatever that bullshit is. I'm talking about real history. You know, I mean, really a real scholastic effort here, man, you know, and you know, doing that. But anyway,
speaking of attention span, you just brought up how we have a very short attention span in 2016. Can we possibly blame that on, let's say, social media or the smartphones?
Well, you know, I think, yeah, maybe, because if for instance, once upon, I remember, I'm old enough to remember where, okay, I'm going on vacation now and I'm driving, and the next time I pick up a telephone is if there's a phone in the house that we're at, or maybe a payphone, but you don't even think about it. You know, we're at school, we're going to go fishing, we're going to go surfing, whatever we're going to do. And then things changed. And now it's like, even when I'm on vacation, man, I was in Hawaii back in December with my girlfriend, a freaking phone drawn all the time, man. You know, we're checking social media, we're checking our email, we're checking our phone messages, we're checking this and that. And some of it's kind of relaxing, some of it's fun. I love posting pictures, and I love talking to my friends, and I love doing all the stuff we like to do. But, wow, you know, I can sense and tell that I'm sort of frantically popping from one thing to the next to see what I'm missing. Like, for instance, today on Snapchat, I got a character named Jay Santos. Today is Jay Santos Day on Snapchat. I'm going to go on Snapchat and do these characters. And already this afternoon I'm going, oh, fuck, I better go and do my Snapchat characters because I got to, you know. Ordinarily, we would be just doing our show, and that would be it. We'd be prepping for the show, and that would be it. But I don't know if it's attention span. I think it's probably the fact there's so many things that need our attention that we can't spend enough time on this, spend enough time on that, something else. Is it good or bad? I think it's caused a lot of anxiety.
Oh yeah.
And I hate email for that very reason. I can feel it in my stomach when I open my email up in the morning. That's not good, you know.
I'm the same way with Facebook and Twitter, dude. Every morning I look at it, and let's say I have good news of someone in radio or comedy adding me back and coming on the show, or me booking you or somebody I want. Nothing's ever good enough. It's really weird with social media. You sort of always want acceptance. So when you get a bunch of retweets or favorites, you're happy. But then when that one tweet doesn't get anything, you get mad over it. It's really bizarre how social media can get us mad about this thing that doesn't even exist. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, man, because, I was talking to Lauren, my girlfriend, and she said she had read that reading other people's timeline on Twitter is one of the great causes of depression.
Oh, yeah.
You know, each day, because you're looking at all these great jobs everybody's getting, and you think your life sucks in comparison, which is one of the true, this has been true since time began. A great route to unhappiness is comparing yourself to other people. We heard that from our mother and father. We heard it from our teachers. But I think Twitter is a great teacher of that. You know, when you compare yourself, that sort of parallel look at life as opposed to a linear look at how you're doing from one day to the next, you know. And try an experiment. Only look at your own tweets. Only look at your own shit. Don't look at your timeline. Don't look at what other people are doing that you're following. Follow them, but don't even look at what they're doing.
You know what I might try and do is just not even look at it for a few hours. That's what I've done the last few nights. I've been watching the show Deadwood on HBO Go, and it's amazing how when you watch TV and you don't have your phone, it's like you're in 2007 again, where back then we had flip phones and we would watch TV. It's really weird how the past 5 years the phones have taken over our lives, man. It is insane.
It's nuts, and now with iPads, I think that's a great idea. I'll split the difference with you. There is a chart that of all places, Cracked, which is a great website and used to be kind of not a very funny magazine, but suddenly they've turned into this brilliantly funny website. And they also post a lot of really usable information. And they had a chart, and the chart showed you what are the best times of day. And we're talking about social media, Ryan, as it applies to you and I, because we work in the entertainment business. I don't know what it would be for just a regular guy or another business, another industry. But in our business, the best time to tweet is 1 to 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've seen that. If you do that, if you limit your tweeting and your Facebook posting to those specific times, you already have kind of cleaned your life up a little bit. Because I started doing that, and I was like, oh, man, that's great. Because I know everything that I do outside of those times doesn't mean jack shit. This is perfect. And I only have to worry about it for 2 hours, to be honest, you know, because I think it's 1 to 3 in the afternoon, I don't know, like, you know, Tuesday through Thursday. And then Facebook is another group of things. And so if you try that and you just treat it as, because social media for me mostly is about work. It's not really about communicating with friends. I can pick up the phone and just talk to them or just go see them. But it is about work, and I want my work to be in certain segments of the day. I don't want it to be 24/7. So if you try that, it might help. But you're totally right, man. It's too much. We don't know how to use it. We need to learn how to use it. We need to learn what parts of the day we should use it. We need to put that sucker down, especially at night. If you're like me, I wake up, I can't sleep, I pick up the phone, I flip it on.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Now I'm awake for 2 damn hours reading all this garbage, and I should be sleeping. So
it's just really weird how everything has changed over time. But here's what I want to ask you. What do you do in your free time so that you don't burn out from social media, from your podcast, from the TV work that you do? What are some fun things that you like to do in your free time?
I'm fortunate enough, Ryan, I live a couple of blocks from the beach here. So one of the things I like to do is go out and walk or run on the beach. I'm a big fan of reading and a big fan of history. I don't read enough of it, but I can lose myself in books pretty easy, especially if it's a great historical text. So I like reading. I love to watch documentaries. So I still kind of use the electronic media, but what I'm using is just for, you know, entertainment. So I watch a lot of documentary stuff. I love traveling, man. If we have the time, I like to just go up the coast to Santa Barbara and hang out. Or if we have time, go up to San Francisco and hang out and take drives. Because we got the coast of California between L.A. and San Francisco is pretty beautiful. And we just got back from Big Sur. Taking drives up there is great. The other thing I like doing is going out here and kayaking. You know, we can take it right out here to the harbor and just and that's really good. I've just now started losing weight again, thank God, and one of the things that has helped me is getting into kayaking, which my cousins did. My family comes from Canada originally, and my cousins were rowers on Lake Ontario and stuff. So, and I know you're from Chicago, right, Ryan?
Yeah, and then I moved to Cleveland to work for Rovers Morning Glory. I was there for 3 months, then I got laid off from the show, AKA fired. And then the ex producer of the show named Rob got me the job here in promotions at 102.5 The Bone. So I'm basically a transplant of Chicago.
Well, when you were growing up, did they have these rowing clubs and stuff out on the lake and stuff? Because they did a lot of that stuff in Toronto. And so I like to do that. Whenever I can, I like to tell people that the goal of my life, and this really should be the goal of everybody's life, is to live your life like you're on vacation all the time.
I love that.
And yeah, you know, and somehow make your work blend in with that, so that you're not like just in this mode of hell where everyone has anxiety, crap, you know, and then oh God, here we go. 2 weeks out of the year, I get to relax. That shouldn't be the way it is. I think that every day you should live your life like you're. Whatever on vacation means, I think it basically means being authentic and looking for as much fun as you can have without being a selfish asshole about it. You know, I mean, we've got to look out for other people. But I think in the context of that, living your life like you're just kicking it every day. And your job is like that, too. One of the great things that has happened to me since I went digital, man, basically I'm my own boss. We make a very, very good living, thank God, for our subscribers and for the people that are fans of our show. And we do the show out of our studio, a home studio. And I have a blast, man, because I don't have to worry about a getting done in and out, because we can stop down, we can edit, we can cut, we can produce as we go. We don't have to worry about the FCC. We don't have to worry about anybody bitching at us about content. You know, you're your own boss, you're doing your own thing, and the people that provide the platform space for us, like Podcast One, they just want to see downloads, you know, and that's it. So I've been able to, at this point in my life now, for the first time in my life, go into my job every day, like really having a blast, and there's nobody hanging over me, and there's no one pointing a finger at me, and there's no program director that I sit down with, or anybody that's going to come into the studio and start ragging on me because this, that, or something else. So sometimes I forget that. I got to remind myself, you know, that I got it pretty good that way, and I'm grateful for that, man. We got to be able to do that every day, no matter what we're doing. And like you and I were saying, with the industry the way it is, you know, we need to get people your age and other people who are creative and who have their stuff together to create the industry anew. and make it that kind of a fun place again, I hope, anyway.
You know what's weird, too, is I moved here from the Midwest, so I live in Tampa Bay. Isn't it amazing how weather can change your mood and the way you look at life? I never see snow, and it's basically warm out 24/7, and that has changed the way I look at everything. And I live about 20 minutes from the beach, and, dude, I come up with the best ideas and the best thoughts and positive thinking when I'm at the beach. It is so relaxing. I love every second of it, man.
Yeah. I left Minneapolis, went to Miami. I spent 2 days laying on that beach and getting warmed up after a year in the snow. Yeah, it's the ocean, man, is like the big mother. You know, she's just sitting out there, and that's where everything came from. And it's peaceful too, man. It's peaceful for the eyes. You know, when you're always looking at this, that, or something else, and buildings and people and dogs and cats, and then all of a sudden you just have this big blue thing out there to look at. It relaxes your literally your vision and your ability to see things. So you're right now in, you've been in Tampa how long?
I've been here for about more than a year. I moved here like on May 8th
of
last year.
Cool. And you're in promotions?
I work in promotions at 102.5 The Bone, and I'm an occasional guest on shows like Drew or Mike Calta or Roger and JP. I'll sometimes answer phones for them or come in for a bit and talk on air. But because of Mike Calta and the exposure he has given me since May 2015, I was then able to win Best Local Podcast last year in September, and I'm hopefully going to be up for it again this year. So it's just unreal how I'm in a place that I love when it comes to the weather. And, dude, the fans here in radio, here in Tampa Bay, they dig it, man. It is like classic radio down here.
Yeah, because you have it for them, man, because there's something there for them to listen to. You know, when there isn't anything to listen to, then the city goes into a, like here in L.A., nobody talks about the radio anymore. No one talks about what's on the radio anymore, man. There ain't nothing on the radio here. You know?
There's a few decent morning shows. I'm a big fan of Woody. I've had him on Old 98.7. He's doing some good things out there in Los Angeles, though.
Who's this cat?
His name's The Woody Show. It's on Alt 98.7. You should definitely check it out. It's a pretty edgy and fun show. But I know what you mean. Los Angeles seems very cookie cutter. All the top markets that are like single digit numbers, like let's say Chicago, New York, Atlanta, it seems like that's where you get the cookie cutter radio.
Yeah, they have more to lose. When I got out to L.A. To do my talk show in 96, there was nothing happening. And, so when I got on the air, it was like a 6 month gauntlet that I had to run of all these whiny ass listeners and crybaby traditional talk radio listeners who, you know, were really upset with this kind of weird shit that I was doing. But things move around, and I think there's so much money in these markets, nobody wants to make a move because it's just, they're scared to death they're going to lose their job, lose their money, lose whatever. You know, you can't do anything in this life, man, unless you're willing to roll the dice and take a huge risk, you know.
When was the time that you did that and you took a big risk and it paid off in the end? What is one time in your life it's happened?
Well, when I decided to throw everything, caution to the wind, back in the year, I can tell you it was 1990. I was 37 years old. I'd spent 17 years in radio doing really nothing. I was a disc jockey and I was doing sort of that cookie cutter stuff you're talking about. And I decided that I was going to, because I knew I had talent. I knew I had enough talent to work in this business. So I decided that I didn't care where I was going to go, where I was going to wind up. I was going to do the kind of work I knew I was capable of. And that's when I threw the caution to the wind. And I said, I don't care where. I sent my resumes everywhere, man. I sent them to, I remember the very first town I sent a resume to was a place called Ainslie, New York. I still don't know where that is. I sent everywhere, you know, everywhere. And funny as it may sound, the station that hired me was right up here in Ventura. It was just about 40 miles from L.A., a little beach community, and this little tiny station with about a 1,500-watt signal at night. And they hired me, and that's where I started. I was willing to go anywhere. And then once I got there, I was willing to do and try anything on the air to really shake it out, man, and to use every creative instinct that I had. And I found myself doing a lot of character voices. That's what happens when you just go ahead and let yourself be, when you get out of your own way, when you're authentic, you find that thing you're really good at, man, and you start doing it. And there's a guy that I do voiceover with here in L.A., Trevor Duvall. Guy's really talented dude, does a lot of animation. He said something once I'll never forget. He said, man, don't do what you love. Do what you're good at. And, man, that hit me like a bolt of lightning, because all my life I'd heard people say, do what you love. What do you love? What do you want to do? Do what you love.
Yeah.
And that confuses people, man. But when you say to them, what are you good at, man? What are you good at? What do you do better than anybody? Well, I mean, I do this and that. You'll find out that's really what you love, man. Why else are you doing so well at it? And that's what I discovered. And you know, I told myself one thing, though, man, and everybody has to say this to themselves. I don't care where it leads. I don't care what happens. I'm going to do this thing. I'll do it respectfully. I'll do it and not try to hurt anybody. I mean, I'm not talking about just bull your way through life, but I don't care what happens to me. I have to do this, and I'm going to do it. That when you make that decision, you're going to be successful.
That's sort of what I did when I moved down here, because I basically got kicked off of Rover's Morning Glory for getting really, really drunk on St. Patrick's Day. But they wanted to get rid of me anyway. They wanted to get rid of me. They were getting sick of me. And I was 21 at that point. So it was the first year to drink legally, whatever. I thought I would never, ever work in radio again. But then I found this promotions job down here. I love FM Talk Radio, and Rob and Mike Calta and Mike Olivero helped me out to get this gig. My point
that's
is,
awesome.
That's kind of what I did, where my uncles and my aunts and my mom, they weren't sure about the move, but I knew in my heart that if I was given access to do a podcast and if I worked hard in promotions, that it would pay off, and it seems like each and every day it is. So I'm always happy at myself for making this move, you know?
Ryan, that's great, man. It's something to be proud of every day of your life, and just keep approaching life that way. And I always say, you know, do it with respect, do it with kindness, you know. You can't lose, you know, believing in yourself and pushing forward with a lot of courage, and also at the same time be as kind as you can to people, because, you know, that was one I had to learn the hard way. I had a really, I think, arrogant style, and I was a real pushy kind of a guy for a long time, and people remember that, man, you know, and It comes back on you, you know. If karma's a bitch, there it is, you know. I think that we have to push our way through to our dreams, man, and at the same time as we go up that ladder, and you still got a lot of ladder to climb, man, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure that you're good to people on the way, because you'll always have a clear conscience, you'll always have a friend, and life's going to be easier, you know. So There's the pitch. That's something that our radio executives, speaking of that, could, you know, learn a little bit of.
Being nice to people, you know what I mean? Just being genuine.
Right. Right on. There's nothing that's not going to cost you anything. And, you know, I saw a study once where it said, they asked, you know, what is the most valuable thing in the workplace for you? A raise in money or to be commended for your work every day? And being commended for one's work rated higher than necessarily getting a regular raise. Now, of course, we all want more money. I mean, why wouldn't we? But at that instant, the more important thing is for people to just have somebody come up and say, God, you're doing a good job, man. You know, when that doesn't happen, I think you're in a workplace where everyone is just frightened for themselves, and they're not really certain and not really sure of what they're doing. So,
now, what I want to ask you is this. You've been in radio, you've been in the media for so long that you have a brand, you're a household name in radio, where it leads to your podcast doing real well. But for people like me that aren't the biggest names yet, or anybody that wants to make a podcast and want to make a living or have it as a job, what are some things we should do looking into the future?
Well, make sure it's what you should be doing. First of all, make sure it's what you are good at,
yeah,
if you will. And once you've determined that that's where you ought to be and not some other area of the business or perhaps some other business entirely, what I would do then is really focus on being authentic. And like we were saying, Ryan, you know, try everything. Try everything that's interesting to you. Find where your real strength is. Are you a monologist? Bill Burr is a comic that I work on his show called F is for Family. It's an animated show.
One of the best shows that's out now. I watched that in 2 hours. That was brilliant.
It's a great show, and we're working on another season now. And,
yes.
And it's based on Bill's life. It's based on his life as a kid. Bill's podcast is basically a monologue, you know?
Oh, it's great.
It's great, yeah, and he does that well. Some people may say, oh, I want to do that, and they'll do it, and they're not too good at it. You know, they kind of suck at it. Are you good as an interviewer? Are you good with just creating on the fly? You know, my thing is I enjoy just going down there and satirizing shit, pretending I'm doing a show and not really doing a show, just doing a lot of character voices and making fun of the things that I hear and I see. Some people may like going out and whatever it is, you have to find it, and that may take a while. You know, that might take a few months, a few weeks of just where is that strength? And you don't have to just be doing a podcast. You can just be talking into a tape. But once you do that, keep doing it and keep finding things about it and keep refining it. Get good at the performance part of what we do and really get good at it. And you get that thing out on iTunes, and then you begin to work your social media in getting that thing listened to. You set up a fan page. You get into some of those metrics. Facebook has fantastic tools. They really do, man, for determining demographics, for determining where your listeners are, for determining what are the best times to share things. We do a lot of sharing of material there. We do a lot of promotional things. If you can maybe get yourself some coffee cups or some hats or whatever, something unique. You know, we have a Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie, which actually the timing was kind of messed up because we came out with this hoodie right maybe a month or so before the Trayvon Martin story.
Yeah.
And I felt kind of crappy, you know, promoting this thing, man. I was like, what are we doing, man? People are going to think we're you know, capitalizing on that. But as it turned out, people didn't really punish us for that. I think they wanted to buy it because the term hoodie just happened to be in the news. But in any event, what I'm trying to say here is you have these things because that will be an incentive. You say, if you share the podcast, we'll draw a name of all the people that share it, and you win a hat or a CD or something. So that gets people sharing. Or if you have a subscription service like we do a lot of incentivizing of people subscribing. We incentivize people to subscribe for a year, and if they do, we give them a slew of free digital downloads of the show. Or we give them, like we're doing a promotion this month where I do character voices for people to use on their answering machines. That sucker was huge, man. I was working my ass off for like a solid week in the studio doing these tapes of things for people. And what I'm saying is once you've got the podcast where you want it to be, now you want to get people listening to it. And you do that by way of Facebook, by way of Twitter, by way of Snapchat. I don't believe that Pinterest is of any value. I don't believe LinkedIn is of any value. I think that Instagram is also huge. Make sure you get your face and your show out there on social media. And then in terms of monetizing it, this is the hard part. You make a decision. Do you want to have a subscription service or, you know, one of these things? I see guys where they have, you know, do you want to donate to the podcast? I don't know whether that works or not. I've never done that. I guess you can if you want to try. Or you can find someone or hook up with one of these platforms that has a sales army like Podcast One, Earwolf. If you're big enough, I would begin to pitch a platform that has a sales arm and say, I got a podcast and here are the downloads. Would you be willing to take this on and put it on your platform? And you'll get a lot of cross promotion and then it gets even bigger. You know, we went from Sideshow Network where we were getting 15,000 maybe a day to Podcast One where we started getting 50,000. 60,000 downloads.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, and the reason for that is because they're cross promoting it on these monster shows, man, on Corolla. Shaq O'Neal has a huge ass podcast, and that helps you because it gets some ears there. But we have to balance it, Ryan. What happens is the more free podcasts you offer, the more downloads you're going to get, and then theoretically the more advertising interest. But you're also running the risk of blowing off subscribers because they're going to say, why am I subscribing when you got all this free content out there? So we have to respect that, and we pull back our free content whenever we feel like we're not, you know, servicing our subscriber base. And so it's an interesting dance, man, and not one that I can tell you I've figured out 100%. Most of our revenue is subscription revenue. You know, our ad revenue is a small portion of what we do. But that I'm getting into the business, and I think really the performance end is finding what you are really strong at on air. And I like, for instance, I enjoy what we're doing right now. I think what we're doing right now is probably really super, super interesting for people that are in our business.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or in the book. The outside people out there, I don't know. I mean, maybe, maybe not.
Well, I do pretty good with listens. Over the last year, I've gained like 100,000 listens and like 40,000 downloads. I have no idea who's listening. I get listens in San Jose, and I get listens in Milwaukee where I'm not even working there. So it's very awesome. Flattering. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. You see how people are hungry for entertainment? They're hungry to listen to things, man. You know, Lauren, she's got her earbuds in, man. I got mine. When we're driving somewhere, she's got those earbuds in, checking out. She's turned me on to a lot of crazy-ass podcasts and shit, man.
What are some that you like to listen to? What are some podcasts?
Well, like she turned me on to one that was insane, man. It was a dude doing a podcast. He'd been in a coma for 10 years. Or not a coma. They thought he'd been in a coma for 10 years. But for a part of that time, he wasn't. He was awake. He was aware. He was just simply paralyzed and couldn't communicate with anybody. Can you imagine that?
That sounds horrible.
Isn't that horrifying? This guy survived it and did this entire series of podcasts on it. Blew me away. I'm like, where do you find this stuff, man? You know, you know, it's great stuff. And look at the podcast Serial out of public radio.
Oh yeah,
you know, look at what a monster that is. So I don't know where she finds her stuff, man. I generally go over there to the iTunes charts and just go, oh, wow, you know, I'll check this out. Here's a sports one. I like soccer. I've gotten really into European soccer, the English Premier League. So I listen to a lot of podcasts, especially from England, because I think those cats are pretty, their dry sense of humor over there is pretty funny. I also am into minor league baseball, as screwy as that sounds. So I listen to minor league baseball podcasts. I can find those on my TuneIn. And I don't listen to comedy not because I don't like comedians. I love comedians, but I don't want to get my point of view polluted. It sounds crazy, but it's kind of how I feel about it, you know? And just that sort of thing. But the fact that you're getting listens like that, man, that's really encouraging. So you need to, are you working social media? Or what are you doing?
Oh, I work social media every day. I do it on Facebook. I do it on Gram. I do it on Twitter and then Snapchat. It's hard because I never know what the Snapchat, because I use this app called Snap Upload, and it would let me upload the guests I'm going to have on. But then I get this nice email from Snapchat saying, don't use that side app or we're going to have to shut down your account. And I feel very douchey when I take these selfies of me in front of the mic. So I do Snapchat. It's just if I'm not working an event for 102.5 The Bone, I just don't want to be that guy that does a selfie every day. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I hear you, man. I mean, Snapchat is, here's something that I did. And the cool thing with Snapchat, by the way, is that it will, if you're in the car and you're Bluetoothing, let's say music.
Yeah.
You can, the Bluetooth, Snapchat picks up the Bluetooth, so the audio is actually right in the phone. It's not background audio. I was sitting in my car one day, and I wasn't driving. I was sitting, and I was listening to one of my podcasts, so I just did a little quick Snapchat, and the show was very audible and clean. So I think the metrics there on Facebook are very, very helpful. Where's all the listenership and how old are the people that are listening and this kind of thing. And then getting those shares going, man, you know, plug the hell out of who you have on and have some free audio. You know, get, if you say, here's my podcast, give them the link so they can listen to it right there and hear what it sounds like, you know. Just shit like that. You know, we're right now we're thinking about doing external advertising beyond online advertising. The only advertising, the only marketing we do is online. We're thinking about it and we've tried to figure out where can we go? Is there magazine or outdoor or TV? You know, what exactly can we do to further, you know, the awareness of what we do? And then the other thing is in my line of work, I do stand up at the Hollywood Improv once a month. I have a thing called Phil Hendry and Friends. So we have, I get on stage with three or four other comics. That helps to get a little exposure as well. And, you know, doing F is for Family and doing some other TV shows helps, you know, you can always, you know, get your name out there that way. But barring that, I think there is a huge opportunity with the social media that exists to get lots of people. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people listening to your show every day, or at least tens of thousands downloading it every day, just working the shit out of it. And you have to have the content. You know, you got to have the content. It's got to sound good. Because I've talked to a lot of guys. They'll say, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. Why can't I get any traction? I go, well, is your show any good, man? You know, you got to, you know, kind of have the content, too. So those are my little ideas.
Now, where can people find all your work? When you're doing your podcast or your voiceover, TV work, social media, where are the best places to find everything you're up to?
My podcast is at our website, philhendryshow.com, as well as on Podcast One and on iTunes. And you can go to any one of those places. You can also find it on SoundCloud. So we feel SoundCloud is a terrific platform. It's generally pretty functional. They don't have too many problems over there. It's real user-friendly. You can drop a link, your SoundCloud link anywhere. So that's where our podcast is, either SoundCloud or philhendryshow.com is a great place because everything about our show is there, including our online store, all of our archives. We got about 20,000 hours of radio, man, going back 20 years, you know, of our show there. My social media, you know, facebook.com/PhilHendryFans, PHANS. That's our fan page, Phil Hendry Show, or excuse me, Phil Hendry Fans, PHANS. And then at Twitter, I've got like, I have two main Phil Hendry accounts, but one is Real Phil Hendry, twitter.com/RealPhilHendry. And then we have Phil Hendry Show. And then I have a lot of character accounts, Margaret Graves account and Bobby Dooley and all these characters that I've created over the years are spread out throughout the Twitter sphere. I'm on Snapchat just as Phil Hendry, PHILHENDRIE. And I'm on Instagram as Phil Hendry, PHILHENDRIE. And we post regularly on Twitter. We post regularly on Facebook. I have a Facebook friends page, but that's pretty much like, Ryan, aren't you over there?
I know, where?
On my friends page at Facebook?
Yeah.
That's pretty much, that's my, see, because I'd be happy to share stuff over there. I'd be happy to share your podcast over there, man.
I would love it, man. I would love any exposure. I love what you do in podcasts.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's a friends page. I generally reserve that just for friends in the industry, you know, people that I know, comics, radio people, some TV people, and friends of mine. But the fan page we have, I'm probably forgetting something, but I think those are the ones of importance anyway.
Dude, you are a busy man, dude. You are a jack of all trades, which is why I look up to you. And what I wanted to bring up was this. I am not trashing anybody in radio, but a lot of the guys that begin edgy and begin innovative, it seems like over the years as they get older, they sort of begin to cash it in, no pun intended, and just do it for the money and do it for the job. But what I love about you is I was listening to your old shows on YouTube. What you were doing in 1994 is the same as what you're doing in 2016, and you never sold out, and you never got more soft, which is why it's been so much fun having you on the show, man. You are a legend in this business.
Hey, Ryan, thanks a lot, man. I'm glad that I was able to do this for you. I apologize that we couldn't get together sooner, but
this was perfect timing. I would love to have you on again.
Yeah, anytime, man. And make sure that you make sure you tag me over there at Facebook, man. I'd love to share all your podcasts, not just this one, but everything you're doing over there with everybody. And I had a great time. And
thank you so much.
Had a lot of friends in Tampa too, so thank you.
Sounds good, and I'll be sure to tag you on LinkedIn and Twitter as well. Sounds good?
Sweet. All right, brother. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Have a good night, man.
Okay, Ryan. You too, man. Thanks again.
All right. Peace out.
Bye-bye.
And that was the one and only legend known as Phil Hendry, as he called into Hoppy Hour. I've had over 150 guests on my show. This was an absolute honor to have him on. Like I said, I'm not trashing anybody in the business. But what I love about Phil, what I look up to Phil about, is the fact that he's never really changed his act, and he's never got more soft over the years. He's just as edgy. He's just as innovative as he was in 1985. If you're a fan of Phil Hendry and everything he does in this business, and you want to hear more of my show after hearing this interview, it's not hard. It's not rocket science. I want to be like Phil Hendry or Adam Carolla or Mark Maron or even Howard or Opie and Jimmy or Mike Calta, 102.5 The Bone, where it's a name in radio. And if you want to hear more of my show, it's not hard. I have my own mobile app where you can hear all 150 interviews I've done since July. And I also do a live show, Hoppy Hour, where I rant about the news. So to find the app, it's not hard. Go to the Google Play and iPhone shop. Search up Hoppy Radio, H-O-P-P-E Radio. And also check out my website. I'm working on it. I'm updating it, but it's RyanHoppyRadio.com, R-Y-A-N-H-O-P-P-E Radio. Of course, my account on Twitter is RyanHoppyRadio. Shoot me an email if you want to be a sponsor or you want to collaborate. If you want to send me hate or positive mail, it's RyanHoppyRadio@gmail.com. Add me on Snapchat, Hoppy Radio. And that's about it. Once again, shout out to Radio Legend and just a legend overall in voiceover and TV, everything. The one and only Phil Hendry for coming on Hoppy Hour. It was an absolute honor. Speaking of which, this has been Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, saying peace out.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour.